Good morning, everyone. Boker Tov. Our topic today is Beit Shan, and we're going to utilize, as you can see in front of you, we're going to utilize these maps. So I hope everybody can see, at least if you're in the back and you can't see, so come slide up. You could argue that the most important, the main thing in life is to realize that Hashem just wants us to be with Him. He just wants us to spend time with Him, to experience the presence, our connection that each one of us has with Hashem. And so to do that, there are lots of different ways, there are different avenues to cultivate that connection. And one of the dimensions that we can label this idea of feeling the presence of Hashem is we call Kedusha. And Kedusha, I guess you could translate it as sanctity or holiness, is expressed in Zman, in time. And it's also, of course, it's expressed in Makom, in place. So we are thinking a lot about Eretz Yisrael, because that is the place in which a person, a neshama, can feel an inner connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So figuring out what is Eretz Yisrael, where is Eretz Yisrael, helps us to nourish and nurture that connection that we have. When we go there, when we think about it, when we learn about it. So we're going to think today specifically about a place that is or is not Eretz Yisrael. This is a topic that we need to think about, because the idea of Kedusha Smakom, the sanctity of the place, is important for us. It's crucial for us to understand how that fits into our own individual connection to Eretz Yisrael. So to begin today, we're going to start with a halachic quandary, a halachic question, which appears in this sefer. Psakim Uchsavim is the third volume of Shilas and Tshuvas B'mitzvos HaTluyos Ba'aretz. Mitzvos, commandments, which are Tluyos Ba'aretz, means they are rooted in the land. They are Eretz Yisrael agricultural or land-based mitzvos. The author of this set of tshuvas of responsa is Me'ez Maran HaGaon Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog. Who was Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog? In addition to being an accomplished chemist and a PhD, in addition to previously serving as the chief rabbi of Ireland, he was the first chief rabbi of the modern state of Israel. He was an Adam Gadol Ma'od. He wrote many Sfarim, many tshuvas, incredible breadth of knowledge, all aspects of Torah life. So this is one volume of a multi-volume series of Rav Herzog's works, in addition to the standard tshuvas that are published called Heichal Yitzchak, from Yitzchak Isaac HaLevi Herzog. So Rav Herzog received a question, and that's what you have on the back of your page. This is the first of two tshuvas that Rav Herzog received. You have Simon Gimel in front of you, and then you also have on the next, you don't have it in your page, but in the sefer, it's Simon Dalid. It's to this Rabbi Adler, Harav de, where is he the rabbi of? Beit Shan. Okay, so first, before we start, on the map, for those who are keeping score, where is Beit Shan? What's that? Right? It's up, it's in the north. So here's the Kinneret. This is Tveria. We spoke about Tveria in the past. If you go south and a little bit east of Kinneret, that is Beit Shan. Okay? So it's in this area of the Jordan Valley. You see it on the map here. This is Beit Shan. In the area of Beit Shan are a series of kibbutzim, which are also on this map, if you could see them. One is here. It's called Tirat Tzvi. Next to that, just slightly north of it, is a kibbutz called Ste Eliyahu. And then, right near there, is another kibbutz
which is, what's that?
Ein
HaNatziv. Ein HaNatziv, exactly. Why are these kibbutzim called these names? Why are these kibbutzim given these three specific kibbutzim given these names? They are given these names after three great gaonim from Europe in the 19th century. Tzvi is Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, Eliyahu was Reb Eliyahu Gutmacher, and Ein HaNatziv is after the Natziv Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. These were religious kibbutzim. So they gave the names of these kibbutzim after great gaonim from Europe in the 19th century. They're all in this area, right here in the vicinity of Beit Shan, okay, in the Jordan Valley, where it's very warm and agriculturally it's very fertile. Okay, so Rav Herzog receives this shaila from the Rav of Beit Shan, but the Rav of Beit Shan is forwarding him a shaila from a local community, the small local community you see on the page. Ze kamozman panu elai mikibutz ein hanatziv. The truth is, Rav Herzog says, I got this shaila from your congregants, so to speak, in your area, in Ein HaNatziv. Al Ayin Dalet is Al Devar on the topic of Orla. And the next tshuva, which you don't have in front of you, the response, not the one you have in front of you is the response to the Rav of Beit Shan. The next one is actually Lichvod Hanhalat Ein HaNatziv, Emek Beit Shan Hashem Yarich Yameim Ushnotam. Rav Herzog also gives an answer directly to the kibbutznikim. He gives them a separate answer. But the first responsa is to the Rav of Beit Shan, who's, I guess you would call it, supervising all of the Torah life that's going on in his neighborhood. Beit Shan, you could see, Beit Shan is a big city, I guess relatively speaking, to these little kibbutzim in the area. And what is the topic? The topic is Orla. What is Orla? What's that? That's right. The first 3 years of fruit which grows in the ground needs to be left in its asur bahana. You can't get any benefit from it. It has to be left completely alone. In the fourth year, we have something called net haravoy, where you redeem it, and then the fifth year, you can eat it. So in Ein HaNatziv, they had the following predicament, where they were growing grapes. They had a vineyard. And the problem is, apparently, from I got this... when you have a tshuva, when you have a response, you don't have the shaila, you don't have the question usually. So I don't know for sure, but I could tell from the next tshuva that this was going, what the issue is. The rub is that they wrote to Rav Herzog, because they say, here's the problem. We grow these grapes, and it turns out that for us, the grapes that grow in the first 3 years are the best. And that poses a serious problem. Now, for other kinds of fruits, it's the opposite. I am told, I'm not a horticulturalist, but I am told that certain fruit trees, that the first couple of years that you plant them, you don't get anything from them, so it's no big deal. It's not much of a nafkamina, so you didn't get, the tiny apples, you're not getting that anyway the first couple of years. But apparently, what they're describing, what it sounds like from the answer, is the issue from the question, is that they have a big problem, and he says it's going to be a big loss. It's a financial issue that this kibbutz is planting all these vineyards, but for the first 3 years, they can't use them. So is there anything they can do? Is there any halachic mechanism to enable them to circumvent this challenge of Orla because of the economic need? That's the question which is being posed. So in the second tshuva, Rav Herzog has a potential solution, but not for things which are already planted. He says the ones that are already planted, he can't imagine any solution. But the reason why they're asking is for a very particular reason. Why are the kibbutznikim in the area of Beit Shan asking this shaila? He says, I'll tell you. Look at the right side. First, the little aleph, you see, says the following. Etzem hadavar, the actual issue, that what? She'ein hanatziv lo me'eretz Yisrael? That Ein HaNatziv is not part of the land of Israel? He says, lo barurli. It's not clear to me. And he quotes a doctor, Dr. Braver, I don't know who that is, Nero Yair, lo hitzalti davar legamri barur.
I didn't get 100% clear on this issue. What do you mean? Eina Natsiv is not part of Eretz Yisrael? What does it mean that Eina Natsiv is not part of Eretz Yisrael? He's a Havamina. There's a possibility that Eina Natsiv is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, why is that important for this discussion? Because we have a rule that Orla, like many other agricultural mitzvahs, are different. Orla is different in Eretz Yisrael versus in Chutz La'aretz. So in Eretz Yisrael, Orla is beferish in the Pasuk. In Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, Orla is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. It's a tradition from Moshe at Sinai. Now, Rav Herzog points out, therefore, that it doesn't make so much of a practical difference for Eina Natsiv. Even if it's in Chutz La'aretz, it's still a biblical concern. However, we have something called Safek Orla B'chutz La'aretz. When we go to the supermarket, you don't have to worry. Maybe this fruit that I'm buying is Orla, because in Chutz La'aretz, we have a principle. Part of the halakha L'moshe Mi-Sinai, part of the tradition is, when in doubt, don't worry about it. Safek Orla in Chutz La'aretz is mutter. That's part of the law. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, Safek Orla, it's a Safek D'oraisa, it's a biblical doubt, you have to be machmir. But in Chutz La'aretz, we have a principle. So the background of this discussion is the people were saying, well, we heard a rumor that Eina Natsiv is not Eretz Yisrael, so maybe because it's not Eretz Yisrael, maybe we could be makel, we could find a leniency on our problem of Orla. So Rav Herzog, later in the tshuva, says, well, I have to tell you, even if it's not Eretz Yisrael, you're still subject to the laws of Orla, and it's still biblical. Now, then he says, there maybe it's Derabbanan, because Bisman Hazeh, etc. But that's the core point. But let's back up for a second. Why would you think that Eretz Yisrael is not, that Beit Shan and that area, Eina Natsiv, these kibbutzim over here, are not part of Eretz Yisrael? Where is that coming from? Now let me take you back. Remember a few weeks ago, we met a very important figure, Rav Eshtori Haparchi, the author of the Kaftor V'Ferach. So Rav Eshtori Haparchi was the man who traveled in the time of the Rishonim in the 14th century. He traveled to Israel and he wrote down all those mitzvahs hatuliyos ba'aretz. He wrote a compendium of the mitzvahs that are pertinent to the land of Israel and the geography and the topography. He went through. This is one of the most important sources that we have about the land of Israel. You're talking 700 years ago. And he was a Rishon. Very, very important. So he lived in Yerushalayim for a period of time. But after that, he actually settled in Beit Shan. And he writes in the Kaftor V'Ferach, he says, in my words, he says, you know, I'm really annoyed because there are a bunch of idiots who keep running around saying that I'm not living in the land of Israel. They keep saying that Beit Shan is not part of the land of Israel. And he says, I'm telling you, stop saying that. Beit Shan is part of the land of Israel. And he has a whole discussion about this. Why is it that anybody would have a Havamina that Beit Shan is not part of the land of Israel? Milavo Hamas at Nachal Mitzrayim, Hamas from the top, the north end of Eretz Yisrael, right? Yesterday, Avram Avinu was promised all the land. The Eretz HaMavtachas is going from way up here all the way to way down there, probably Wadi Al-Arish or even beyond. So trying to figure out why would anybody think that Beit Shan is not included. Remember last time we said, when we talked about Tveria, that Tveria is B'tabur Ha'aretz. So it's like just above the midpoint of the land of Israel. So how you talking? Of course Beit Shan is part of the land of Israel. Not only that, so if you look, so Beit Shan is going to be over here. We even had the land on the Transjordan. So that's Chatzi Shevet Menashe and Reuven and Gad. That's all down here. All here is also part. So this, of course, what do you mean? It's smack in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. How can you tell me it's not part of Eretz Yisrael? This is one question that we're going to deal with. Let's put that on hold for a second. Shifting gears completely to source number one on the front side of your page. You have a very, very sad story. This is the end of Shmuel Aleph, and we find the demise of the first king of Israel. His name was Shaul. King Saul, Shaul HaMelech, meets his unfortunate and very untimely, grisly end in this battle with the Pelishtim.
Uplishtim nilchamim b'Yisrael, vayanusu anshe Yisrael mipnei Pelishtim, vayiplu chalalim bahar Gilboa.
So the Jews are fleeing from the Pelishtim, and where do lots of people die? They die on Har Gilboa. Where is Har Gilboa? If you look on the net, on the map that you have in front of you on the top right, that's a Google map that we have that takes you by car. It's, well, in those days they didn't have a car, but 20 minutes from Har Gilboa today to Beit Shan. Can you see it? So we're talking about this area.
What they call today, this is the modern Israel. This is Maale Gilboa over here, right in the vicinity of Beit Shan. You see, it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes by car. So Maale Gilboa is here. They're running away from the Plishtim. And what happens? People are dropping.
Vayadbeku Plishtim es Shol v'esbona, vayaku Plishtim es Yehonasan v'esavinod v'esmalkishua b'nei Shol. And they kill the children of Shol, that's Yonasan, Avinodav, and Malkishua. And what happens? In the next pasuk, Shaul is hit by the archers, and he becomes ill. We're going to skip the next section because it's not pertinent for us today, exactly the death of Shaul. And pasuk Zion, Vayiru Anshi Yisrael Asher Be'ever HaEmek, on the other side of the valley, Vasher Be'ever HaYarden, which now you can understand from the geography what you're talking about, because this area is the Jordan Valley. Emek HaYarden, over here. You see to the left is Emek Yisrael, the Jezreel Valley. This is Emek HaYarden over here. And there are people who are on the other side of the Jordan who are witnessing this battle. They all see that the general, the commander-in-chief, has just been killed. So it's a catastrophe. Vayazvu es ha'orim, they abandon the cities, vayonusu, vayavo, plishtim, vayeshvu b'hem. So the people in that area, over here, on this side and on this side, they abandon their cities, and the plishtim settle in them. And what happens? Pasuk ches, vayihimi macharas, it is the next day, vayavo, plishtim, lefashet es ha'chalalim. So the plishtim come out, and they come to, lefashet literally means to unclothe the deceased. So they're going to take whatever they can find. And what do they find? Vayimtzu es Shaul ves shloshes banov noflim bahar Gilboa. They find Shaul, King Saul, and there he is dead on the mountain of Gilboa. Vayichrusu es rosho, they cut off his head. Vayafshitu es kelov, and they remove his clothing. Vayishalchu be'eretz plishtim sovev, they send it around the land of plishtim. Levaser beis atzabeim, to put in the house of their idols. Ve'es ha'am, and tell their people, look what we did. Vayasim ves kelo beis Ashtaros, they put it in the house of Ashtaros, which was a Canaanite god. Ve'es gviyaso, and his body, taku b'chomas beis Shan. They took his body, and they stuck it, taku, in the wall of Beit Shan. Now, some of Farshim say that the word here, Beis Shan, is not spelled with an aleph, so it's a different place. But the majority opinion is that this is a biblical spelling anomaly of the same place that we call Beit Shan. It's Shin Aleph Nun Shin Nun. It's the same place. And it would make sense because this is Har Gilboa, this is Beit Shan. Right near, they go and they, you'll excuse us, they hang his body, his beheaded body, on the walls of Beit Shan. The end of the story is how the Anshe, the men of Yavesh Gilah, go through the night and they provide a kavod acharon, honor for Shaul, by stealing back his body and burying him and the bodies of his children. And they give him a proper burial and they fast for 7 days. So we ask ourselves, what's the pshat? The omic of this pshat. Is it just coincidental that the Pelishtim took Shaul HaMelech, the king of Israel, and they stuck his body in Beit Shan? Why Beit Shan? Is that just an accident of history that they happened to be in the neighborhood of Beit Shan, so they stuck him in Beit Shan? Or is there something, there is a message, there is a theme that is being referenced by the fact that they put his body at Beit Shan? I think there's got to be a reason. Now you can tell me, you know what the reason is? Is because they wanted to gloat, and they wanted a high trafficked area. Lo aleinu, I wasn't alive for this time, but there were those who remember when Eli Cohn, Zichrono Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, was hanged. So he was hanged, I think, on a crane in the town square in Damascus. So why did they do that? So they wanted everybody to see Lo aleinu. What would happen to a quote-unquote a Zionist spy? So Beit Shan, if you look at it, it's right here in a very warm, fertile area at the crossroads of, in the ancient Near East, of the travel road. So a lot of people, agriculturally and commercially, were traveling through this area. So they say, we're going to put him in a place that'll be tremendous bizayon. And they wanted to stick it to us. They wanted to hang him in a public area. So that's possible. But maybe there's an omic here. There's a lesson for us to understand. So our two issues are understanding why it is there's a controversy about Beit Shan being part of Eretz Yisrael, number one. And number two, why is significant that the Pelishtim are putting Shaul HaMelech's body in Beit Shan? Let's go weiter. Here's the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin, in source number two, Vav Amud Beis. Heyed Rabbi Yoshua ben Ziruz ben Chamiv Shel Rab Meir. Rabbi Yoshua ben Ziruz, who was the son of the father-in-law of Rab Meir, testified lefnei Rebbe, before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that what? She'ochal ola shel yerek bebeit Shan. That Rab Meir ate a leaf of a vegetable in Beit Shan. That's what he did. Does that say anything to you yet? But to Rebbe, it says something very big. Rebbe says, wait a second. You're telling me that Rab Meir walked outside and he had some fruit or some leaf from some fruit just like that? What is the implication? What did he not do before he ate that?
Separate.
That's right. He didn't take trumas, masros. He just ate it. From that maisa, Rav, the Gemara says, "Vehitir Rebbe es Beis Shan kulo al yado." Says the Gemara in Chulin, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, now he's in the beginning of the third century, says that this area, es Beis Shan, this whole area, it's mutter. It's mutter to eat without the standard ties. Why? Why is Rav Meir eating it without taking the tithes? And why is it that that means that it's not part of Eretz Yisrael? And why is it not part of Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara on Zion Amud Aleph says, I'll explain it to you why. Says the Gemara, you see the next chunk here in the source number two? Says the Gemara, I'll tell you why. Harbe krochim kovshim oli Mitzrayim, velo kovshim oli Bavel. The first thing you have to understand is that there were two conquests of the land of Israel. There was the first conquest in the days of Yehoshua. That's what we call Kibush Mitzrayim, Alias Mitzrayim, Ole Mitzrayim. The people who went out of Egypt, they came to the land of Israel, and they conquered the land. And how far is that land? So if you look, the Atlas Das Mikra has a lot of pictures about this. There are different, over the centuries, there have been different viewpoints of how to exactly measure. Let's say the bottom edge of Eretz Yisrael, down here somewhere, the Sinai Desert, there's something called Nachal Mitzrayim. Well, what is Nachal Mitzrayim? What's the southern edge of Eretz Yisrael? So maybe it's Wadi El Arish, which is down here, or maybe it's the Nile River, which is down here. That's the southern edge of Eretz Yisrael, the biblical Eretz Yisrael. And then the northern section is from Hamas, right? Very, very high up, somewhere probably in Turkey, up here. And then you have to measure exactly where you put
Hamas is somewhere in Turkey or Syria or Lebanon, something like that. There's a big machlokas where you measure it. Then it's going to come down. It's going to be Aver HaYarden on this side. Then it's going to come back over here and go down like this. This is going to be, so if you look on your map on the top left of your page, you see Shevet Menashe coming across in the middle. Do you see the Menashe in the middle? And then under him is Gad, and then Reuven. So this is going to be Menashe like this. And then under that is going to be Gad. And then over here is Reuven. So this Menashe, you'll notice how he crosses the Jordan River. Why is Menashe on both sides of the Jordan River? Because Chatzi Shevet Menashe, Laku Nachlasim Be'Ever HaYarden, half of them were on this side, and half of them were on this side. So that's why you'll see on your map that Menashe goes across, just where it says north of Shomron, between Yisachar and Ephraim. So you see Menashe cutting across the Jordan area. So this section of Beit Shan is in the Chelek of Menashe. It's right over here. When the Jews came on the Aliyah Rishona, on the first Aliyah, they came and they conquered Eretz Yisrael the first time. Then what happens? Babylonians come and they exile the Jews. That kibush, that conquest, is now over. So they come back many centuries later, after Ezra has the opportunity to resettle the land of Israel. Ezra comes back, but it's not the same. First of all, Ezra's resettlement of the land of Israel, was that a military conquest? No. How did he get back? He had permission from the government. He had permission from the Persian government. This is part of the story with Ahasuerus, the backstory of Purim, right? Ezra had permission to go and settle the land of Israel. And he said to everybody, please come. Who did not show up with Ezra? Who did not really... didn't really get up and go. First of all, most people didn't leave Bavel. They didn't. He had, what did he have? 40-some thousand people. That was all he had. And among those people, you know who he couldn't find? No disrespect to all of them here. He couldn't find any Levim. So he punished the Levim. And there was a special knas that if you're a Levi, no disrespect to the Levim, David and Tzvi, I'm just telling you that at that time, they took away the Miser from the Levian, the Gemara says, and they gave it to the Kohanim as a punishment for the Levian. I'm just saying, it's bad, you know, it's bad stuff. He couldn't find any Levian to work in the Beis HaMikdash. So he comes back, he doesn't have a lot of people, and it's not a kibush of Milchama, it's a kibush of Yishuv. And because it was this not integrated, not holistic conqueror, they didn't conquer all of the land. They only settled in certain areas. So I didn't make maps for you, but you can imagine. So they're living in some of these places. But imagine like this, something like that. So the Gemara says that this was not an accidental map that was drawn in this way. It was by design. That Ezra, by design, did not have everybody settle in the original places, in the full Eretz Yisrael that was before. The question is, why not? Why wouldn't he just settle the land in the Aliyah Shnia like they did in Aliyah Rishona? So Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Kasovar, second line here in the second chunk in the Gemara, in source number two, they held Kedusha Rishona, step one is that when Yehoshua first came and conquered the land became sanctified. It had Kedusha. What's the practical ramifications of Kedusha Sa'aretz? What are the laws that are going to be in play? Shemitah, one, yeah? Maestros, Trumos, Orla being from the Pasuk, Yovel, all these things. They're all in play now. Yehoshua conquers the land, settles the land, all the dinim are in place. But the Gemara says, that kidsha, lo kidsha la'asid lavo. That kedusha is not permanent. Lo kidsha la'asid lavo. This is two opinions of the Gemara Maseches Megillah. It appears a couple of places in Shas. When Yehoshua was Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael, the first time, it was Niskadesh, but when the Babylonians came and threw them out, there went the sanctity of the land. Lo kitcha la'asid lavo.
It was only temporary. So now when Ezra comes to settle the land the second time, he's going to endow it now with new Kedusha. Says the Gemara, V'hinichum, by design, last line here in the second chunk, Kedesh Yismachu Aleim Aniim Bishvius. When the Aliyah came from Babel, they left out sections of Eretz Yisrael unsanctified so that the poor people could rely on them during Shemitah. What's the pshat? What does that mean? They were worried about the poor people during Shemitah. Someone explain that. Why is it that leaving like this area, as we now understand, why is this becoming an issue? Let's focus on this area right here for a moment. Why is this area not being sanctified by Ezra when he comes from Babel significant for paupers? What does it have to do with poor people? And why is it Dafka on Shemitah? What's the issue?
It's very fertile.
Okay, it's very fertile. So what does it have to do with poor people?
They can glean.
Yeah, say that?
They can glean from the edges, and if they can't eat it because sanctified, then they don't have food.
Okay, right on the right track. In Shemitah, is anybody allowed to work the land?
No.
So that means that everything is just fallow. Whatever grows, grows. And that produce is up for grabs for whom? Up for grabs for?
Anyone.
Everybody. So if you're poor, you're in essentially the same boat as the person who owns the property. So what chance do you stand to make a living during Shemitah? It's going to be terribly difficult. But what happens during a regular year? The Balabatim, who own these lands, all of you, you know, I don't own any land in Eretz Yisrael. Emir Tzashem, Mashiach is going to come, and they're going to put me in Eretz Yisrael. They're going to give me a city. I'm going to be and live in one of these special cities that belongs to the Kohanim, Levim. We'll probably be neighbors, right? We have a special city. Well, we don't have land. But the people here, you all, the Yisraelim who have land, what are you mechuyev to do with your land? You have to leave Peah, a corner of the land. You have to leave Olos and Peret and all the different things, Matnas Aniyim. So there's always a portion for the poor people, but not on Shemitah. So it turns out, ironically, that even though Shemitah, in a certain sense, is an economic equalizer, but it's also a very deleterious phenomenon for the poor. Because since there are no designated Matnas Aniyim, they end up getting way at the bottom. So Ezra says, I have a problem. I have this settlement that we're trying to settle, but if we conquer and settle all the land comes Kaddish, Bekdusha Sa'aretz, then the poor people, what's going to be with them? Who's going to take care of them? It's going to be a big economic problem. So therefore, he said, it's better to leave some of the land unsanctified so that we can worry about the poor.
Unsanctified means unsettled.
So, it's a good question. It sounds like it was settled, but unsanctified. It's a good question. So this is a discussion in Acharonim. There's a big discussion in the Rambam and Hilchos Beis HaBechira about how the mechanism of sanctifying the land took place the second time. Because the first one was Kedusha Ayidei Kibush. So this is a discussion. But let's assume for a second that that's the way that it was, because Beit Shan is exactly the case in point. Rebbe says, wait a second, until now, we always thought, and Rebbe's living in the second century, the third century, Rebbe's thinking, why should Beit Shan not be part of Eretz Yisrael? You're always going to take Tumas Amisus. When you grow food in Beit Shan, you're going to take it. This is the precursor to Stei Eliyahu and Tirat Tzvi and Ein HaNetziv. You're going to work there. You're going to have beautiful fruit for the land of Israel. The Rosh Hashanah gives you a gift. You're going to take Trumas and Meisters. Ah, but Rebbe heard a rumor. He heard from this testimony of Rebbe Yeshua ben Zariz that Rebbe Meir assumed that Beit Shan, this section from Menashe, was not Niskadish in the Aliyah Shniyah. And therefore he changed the Minuk. And the Gemara goes on to explain how he had the authority to do that. But Rebbe says, and this is the origins of the whole discussion of whether or not Beit Shan has Kedusha Sa'aretz or not. And this was the discussion that Rav Eshtori HaParchi was having in the 13th century with people, trying to tell them not to denigrate Beit Shan,
Because they're saying they heard a rumor that the Gemara says in Chulin doesn't have Kedushas Haaretz. It's still a very special place. It still has Kedushas Haaretz. And this is what Rav Herzog was asked about. So he asked this Dr. Breuer, who says, what's the story historically, archaeologically? Is this Beit Shan that we have today, is this exactly the same location as it was Beit Shan in the days of Rebbe? And we should say, it's technically Chutz Laaretz, according to the opinion who says that the first Kedusha did not remain. Or no. This is the issue. Make sense now? Geographically, we now understand. Beit Shan is in this area that the Gemara says in Chulin was not Niskadesh. So now we can try to understand why this place. Why is it? Is this also an accident of history that Beit Shan is identified as the Makom or as a Makom that was not in the Scottish, was not sanctified when Ezra came up? Why did he choose that place? What is significant? What's the message? Well, take a look at this last section in number 3. This is a pasuk in the 8th parak of Shulchan. This is not the only place, but it is significant, I think. V'lo horish Menashe as Beit Shan. When they split up the land to be conquered by the different tribes, when Yehoshua first arrived in the land, you know what it says? That the Chevra from Menashe did not do their job. They did not settle in the land that they were promised. They didn't drive out the Canaanite people living in Beit Shan. And the neighboring Tanakh and the Dor and the Yivlam and this area and Megiddo, Vayol HaKanani Lashevas Ba'aretzahi, and the pasuk says in Chavches, Vayi Kechazak Yisrael, when the Jewish people became stronger, Vayosam Es HaKanani Lamas, they put the Canaanites under attacks. However, Vahorish Lo Horisho, they did not inherit that land. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's a bad thing. That's a problem. We were given a mitzvah of Hachrem Tachrimim. Virishtam also Vishavtam Ba. It was our job to settle the land. We started with the concept called Kedusha, sanctity. Kedusha, explains Rav Soloveitchik, is a partnership. Rabbi Shlomo puts his presence in a particular place and he invites us to partner with him. So the Makom HaMikdash, God mekadesh it from the beginning of eternity, from the first moments of creation. And then he says, Avraham Avinu, you be mekadesh it. You bring your son as an Ola there. Noach, you bring a korban there. Kedusha, sanctity is a partnership. Rabbi Shlomo says, I'm going to give you the land. You need to settle it, to dwell in it. That's what creates the Kedusha, our participation. That's why B'Zman HaZeh, we don't have full Kedusha Sa'aretz. That's why Shemitah B'Zman HaZeh, according to most opinions, Shemitah today is rabbinic in Israel. It's not biblical, because most people are not living there. We don't have what we call Rov Yoshevei Olam. That's why we don't have Yovel, the Jubilee year. What does the word Menashe mean? Nashani Elokim Eskol Amoli Ve'eskol Beis Abi. Menashe says, there's something called forgetting. Nashani. Yosef says, and this is part of a longer discussion, Nashani Elohim is kol avi, is beis avi. The Rebbe Shlomo has made me forget my father's house. Now, of course, he didn't forget his father's house. That was the whole point. But the word Menashe means to forget. This is not the only way to look at Menashe. That's a little bit unusual. Why is it, like you see on your map, that Menashe is a shtickle over here and a shtickle over there? So when they came to ask Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to be in Aver HaYardin, who's the they? Who came to him in Parshas Matos? It was B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain. And at the end of the Parsha, who else is there? The Chatzi Shevet Menashe. So some, I think there's a Yerushalmi that indicates that Moshe Rabbeinu put Menashe there because they loved the land of Israel and he wanted them to kind of keep the B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain in line. But the other way to suggest it is that B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, they, according to Moshe Rabbeinu, they were a little bit misguided. They were so worried about their finances and their sheep that they didn't see the vision, the dream of the land of Israel. And then you turn around, and who else is living on that side? Chatzi Sheva Menashe. They get dragged into it. It's not the only way to understand it, but maybe. It's Menashe. There's a forgetfulness here. There's a chisaron. There's a lack of taking achrayas, of owning the land of Israel. Nashani. We didn't own up to it. So they're living half in Chutz Laretz, and they don't conquer the land when they get in there. So it's Lamas Ovi, but it's still a problem. They're not the only ones who are not driven out. Who else is hanging around in the land of Israel and is causing us so many tzaras for such a long time? The Plishtim. But now that we have a map, we can understand the extent of how serious the Plishtim problem is. Where did the Plishtim live? Where were they hanging around? Here. Khan Yunis, Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, this area right here. Seder. That's where the Plishtim are hanging around. Really? That's where they're causing problems. Before this story in Sefer Shmuel, the one that you have here in Shmuel Aleph and Perek Lamed Aleph, there's a previous battle, famous battle at Michmash, where Yonasan does a miracle and he knocks off. Where is Michmash? Well, today, Michmash is over here. They call it Ma'ale Michmash. Where is it? It's north of Yerushalayim. Where is it on the map? It's down here. I can't find it at the moment. Hang on. Here it is. No, that's Malach Misha. It's around here somewhere, but I don't see it right now. It's here. They're having a battle with the Plishtim here? What on earth are the Plishtim doing over here? You know what they're doing over there? They have been able to infiltrate and settle in the land of Israel, Ad Kadekach, that they've gone from here. We're familiar with fights that they had near Beit Shemesh. You're talking about people who have gone from the coast, in through Beit Shemesh, through the center of the land, and where are they fighting with Shaul HaMelech? Where does Shaul die? Way up here, in Ma'ale Gilboa. Lo aleinu, do we ever realize the extent of the Plishtim's inroads into the land of Israel? You're talking about all the way from Gaza, through the heart of the land of Israel, up to Ma'ale Gilboa. They're kimat at the Kinneret. Where do they take Shaul HaMelech's body? They put it on the walls of Beit Shan. The Rebbe Shlom says, look, Chevra, we want to have Kedushas Makom. We want to have the Jewish people settle the land of Israel. I can't do it all. You have to make it happen. You have to settle the land. And if we don't settle the land, what's going to happen is that these Plishtim are going to create so many problems that they're going to end up all the way up in Beit Shan. You would never, in wildest dreams, imagine that the Plishtim could get to Beit Shan. They take his body and they put it, the king of Israel, on the walls of Beit Shan. It's not by accident they put it there, because the Gemara says, what did the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says that we didn't settle in Beit Shan. We didn't own the land. We weren't settling it from the Kedusha Rishona. And now I can understand also why, when it comes to the Kedusha Shnia, it's not an accident of history that when Ezra came, he left Beit Shan, because Beit Shan perhaps symbolizes the places that we weren't mechazik the Kedusha. We didn't settle it. And so we didn't settle it. We don't merit that gift of the Kedusha. The Rebbe Shlom says, I'll do my half. I was Mekadosh the whole land, all the way from the top, from the days of Avraham Avinu, from the top all the way till the bottom. What do we need to do? And it's scary to talk about this because we're sitting in Skokie. But in the days of Ezra, the Rebbe Shlom said to them, go and settle the land. So yes, on one level, Ezra wasn't Mekadesh the land because he was worried about the poor people. It was a social concern. But underneath that, we can argue that there's a spiritual element. Now we can understand why Rav Herzog is having this discussion. Right, we started with two questions. Why is Rav Herzog talking to the people of Beit Shan about Orla? And why is it Rav Shtori Aparchi having issues with people saying that Beit Shan is Chutzlaretz? And why are the Pelishtim hanging Shaul's body there? Now it's all one and the same. Rav Herzog was dealing with Beit Shan and trying to figure out the geography of Beit Shan because we have a tradition that Beit Shan was not Niskadish in the Kedusha Shnia. Why was it not Niskadish in the Kedusha Shnia? Because it was never conquered in the first place. Because we as a community, as a Kalal, as a Tzibur, and the people of Menashe, the Nashani, the forgetfulness, we didn't take it all the way. And because of that, we ended up with Pelishtim all the way up in Beit Shan. So what do we learn from this? We learn from this that the Ribono Shel Olam is waiting for us to step up to the plate. He's waiting for us to be Mekadesh all the parts of our lives. And as we started at the beginning of this journey, when we talked about the concept of a makom, each one of us has a total Eretz Yisrael within ourselves. We have the entirety of the land. We have a little Yerushalayim within us. We have a little Be'er Sheva within us. We also have a little Beit Shan. A little Beit Shan. A little area where the Ribono Shel Olam says, I'm going to give you sanctity. I'm just asking you, please show up and be Mekadesh it yourself. Don't leave it for the Plishtim. Don't leave it to fester, unredeemed, unsanctified. So it's not going to be perfect. How much did it take? How much time did it take? The Gemara has a tradition that it took Sheva Shekovshu v'Sheva Shecholku, 14 years for Yehoshua and the whole Jewish people, the whole Chever, to figure out where everybody's going to live, and you're going to live in this apartment, I'm going in that apartment. It took them 7 years to conquer, and as many years as it was to divide it up between everybody. So it takes a long time. It's going to take a whole lifetime for us to invest Kedusha into our lives, into all the little points in our soul. But we have to remember that's the goal. Not to allow anything to be forgotten. Not to have any nashani. To make sure that we strive to increase the level of connection, the Kedusha smakom, in every part of our lives. Have a great week. So that is the discussion about what is the sanctity of Eretz Israel today. That's the controversy in the Rambam of the space of the universe.